Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahano Bhunaktu Sahavīryaṁ karavāvahai Tejasvinavadītamastu madhvidhishāvahai Om Shantish Shantish Shantihi.
May the Supreme Lord protect both the teacher and the student, and may He cherish and nourish us both. May we work with full energy, may our study be perfect, and may it give us good results. May we never feel ill will towards others. So I'd like to start today's session by sharing with you a very interesting experience I had yesterday and realizations that came from it. They're in relation to the question that Bettina asked. She was asking about Garbhodakshaya Vishnu and what Prabhupada was saying in his purport. So the experience of her asking the question and what happened to me at that time was very interesting. Usually when you ask me questions, Prabhupada and Supersoul are very kind, and I manage to say something that makes sense. But yesterday I actually felt completely bewildered. I couldn't enter into the purport. So it's been my experience as I've been teaching Bhagavad Gita that Prabhupada and Krishna are actually performing their own interactive lila with me. They don't want me doing this as gyan, they want me doing it as vigyan. And at every step of the way that I've been teaching Gita, whatever we've been studying, they've been giving me practical experience of what we're doing. For example, when we were doing the famous second chapter about the body, you know, we're spirit, soul, not the body, I taught all of those classes with either flu, fever or boil or all three at one time. And it was just all constant, all the way through. It's been like that. So at first when I thought about the experience afterwards, I thought, well, Krishna just put me into bewilderment, so I got a little bit of a taste of what was going on here. You know, Arjuna's bewildered, so Krishna's reminding me that without his presence I don't have any intelligence, you know. But then I realized something very interesting. I realized why he put me, it wasn't actually that I was like Arjuna and he was putting me in bewilderment, but in fact, I was in bewilderment, and he was giving me a shake and making me aware of why I was in bewilderment. So I wanted to share with you what realizations came out of that experience, because they're very much relevant to this verse and Bettina's question yesterday. So the first thing I'd like to do is just read the verse and purport, 2.11.15. Here, Krishna is saying, Arjuna said, "My dear Lord Krishna, I see assembled in your body all the demigods and various other living entities. I see Brahma sitting on the lotus flower, as well as Lord Shiva and all the sages and divine serpents." Then Prabhupada in his purport says, "Arjuna sees everything in the universe. Therefore he sees Brahma, who is the first creature in the universe, and the celestial serpent upon which the Garbhodakshaya Vishnu lies in the lower regions of the universe. The snake bed is called Vasuki. There are also other snakes known as Vasuki. Arjuna can see from the Garbhodakshaya Vishnu up to the topmost part of the universe on the lotus flower planet where Lord Brahma, the first creature of the universe, resides. That means that from the beginning to the end, everything could be seen by Arjuna, who is sitting in one place on his chariot. This is possible by the grace of the Supreme Lord, Krishna." So what I realized, the first thing I realized by Prabhupada's mercy and by the mercy of Bettina's question is that I wasn't able actually to enter into this purport because of a preconception. I've always been aware that my misconceptions block my vision of things. So I'm very careful about misconceptions. But this was a preconception that Garbhodakshaya, he's lying in the middle of the ocean, you know, like in the middle of the universe. So what is this talk? That started the bewilderment, lies in the lower regions. I think, well, it's half a universe full of water, so he's actually in the middle. But then Prabhupada revealed to me what he's actually saying here. And he also made it clear to me that I had subtly offended the potency that is at work here when I explained what was happening in the 14th verse, where I mentioned that the divine vision that Krishna is giving Arjuna here is not an advancement for him, but rather a retread. From his perception, that is correct. What I said is correct. But we have to be very careful how we approach Shastra, because from our position, this transitive vision that he has given him is phenomenal. It's an amazing vision that he's been given to see the universal form. So we have to remember that it is an incredible potency that it's at work here. And then the mood should be then, so how much greater should be the potency to see Krishna in his personal form. That's a very subtle point, but it's like that. So just to explain what Prabhupada is actually saying in this purport, I want to do graphically as Subhadra started to do yesterday. So what we have here, she explained, is we have the Brahmanda, we have the universe, and we do have it half full of water. And Navadaksai Vishnu is lying here on Seshan. But the interesting thing that Prabhupada is subtly saying in the purport, which is really mind-blowing when you think about what he's saying, is that the stem that is coming from the lotus navel of Navadaksai Vishnu is coming up through here, and then there's the lotus, excuse my lousy drawing, here, lotus planet of Brahma is here, okay? Now, the interesting thing, I'll just make the stem a bit wider so we can actually understand the magnificence of this vision. The stem, all of the planets are within the stem, you know? So it is the lower regions of what we're talking about because these are the lower planets. And it's even explained in the fifth canto that the Naga Loka residents, especially the young women, they massage Ananta Sesha's feet. I don't know her feet, but apparently he does. So anyway, so what happens is that what's here is that Arjuna, he's on Earth planet. He's within the lotus stem. And he's on our Earth planet in a little country called Bharatvas, just on a chariot. Right? But by the inconceivable potency of Krishna, he can see the whole picture. He's in here, but he can see all this. So you can get from this purport, you can then understand the amazing potency that is working for Arjuna to be able to see it. Can you imagine that you're sitting in this room and you can see the whole of America? I mean, it's a very small example. We can't even do that, but he's sitting on his chariot in Bharatvarsha. And he's seeing beyond the lotus. He can see down, he can see up, and he can see the whole thing. Plus everything that's going on here. So it's actually an inconceivable vision that he's having. So I'm very grateful for that question that triggered off a whole different understanding of this purport. But, does that answer your question then? All the planets. Yeah, that's explained in the second canto, in the eighth chapter. Yeah. All of the planets are within there.
Do they all go out of the lotus then?
No.
That's
pardon?
That's the
space. I guess I have never had that question before. Yeah. But the light he's talking about is within the lotus stem. All the planets are within the lotus stem. Yeah. Yeah, listen to me. We could get into quite a discussion. Okay. If you want to know more about this, if you want to really know properly about this, I suggest you do the Bhakti Bhai Bhav course last next year. Bhakti Bhai Bhav, study of Bhagavatam. It's all explained actually in the eighth chapter, or not all explained, but some of it is explained in the eighth chapter of second canto. There's a lot in the fifth canto, some in third also. So, if you're doing the same process as we're doing now, it's a lot easier to understand. You know, when you've got a group of devotees together seriously studying Bhagavatam, it's going to be nectar. Okay, so now we'll start. After sharing that with you, we'll start today's classes. Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting. I'd like to read the purport on that. Thank you. At the end of yesterday's verses, Arjuna asked Kalarupa two questions. Does anybody remember what those questions were? Yeah? And? Who are you? So he's asking, who are you and what is your mission? And in verse 32, Krishna answers both these questions. So let's take a look at that verse. Here he says, "Time I am the great destroyer of the worlds, and I have come here to destroy all people, with the exception of you, the Pandavas. All the soldiers here on both sides will be slain." So Prabhupada's purport to this verse is a very, very powerful one, and I'd like us to read the whole purport. "Although Arjuna knew that Krishna was his friend and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was puzzled by the various forms exhibited by Krishna. Therefore he asked further about the actual mission of this devastating force. It is written in the Vedas that the Supreme Truth destroys everything, even the Brahmanas. As stated in Katha Upanishad 1-25, Yasya Brahmacha Kshatram Cha Obbe Bhavata Odanaha Mrityo Yasyopadishanam Yat Ita Vediyatrasaha. Eventually, all the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, and everyone else are devoured like a meal by the Supreme." It's a little bit different than the meal we read about in 9:26. "This form of the Supreme Lord is the all-devouring giant, and here Krishna presents himself in that form of all-devouring time. Except for a few Pandavas, everyone who was present on that battlefield would be devoured by him. Arjuna was not in favor of the fight, and he thought it was better not to fight. Then there would be no frustration. In reply, the Lord is saying that even if he did not fight, every one of them would be destroyed, for that was his plan. If Arjuna stopped fighting, they would die in another way. Death could not be checked, even if he did not fight. In fact, they were already dead. Time is destruction, and all manifestations are to be vanquished by the desire of the Supreme Lord. That is the law of nature." So Prabhupada has really captured the mood of Kala Rupa here, and he's reminding us that regardless of our position, our bodies will meet with destruction. And there's no exceptions. That's nature's law. Time eventually destroys everything and everything material. So this is another good reason it's better to identify with spirit rather than with matter. And for us as devotees, that means identifying with Krishna in his Archivigraha form, the holy name, Prabhupada's books. All of these will increase our identification with spirit rather than with matter. In verses 33 and 34, Kala Rupa makes it very clear that his mission of destruction also involves Arjuna. He wants him to act as his instrument. Let's read exactly what he says here. "Therefore get up, prepare to fight and win glory. Conquer your enemies and enjoy a flourishing kingdom. They are already put to death by my arrangement, and you, O Savyasachi, can be but an instrument in the fight. Drona, Bhisma, Jayadratha, Karna, and other great warriors have already been destroyed by me. Therefore kill them and do not be disturbed. Simply fight and you will vanquish your enemies in battle." The Acharyas tell us something very significant about Krishna's calling Arjuna Savyasachi here. In the purport to verse 33, Prabhupada explains in his purport that Savyasachi refers to one who can shoot arrows very expertly in the field. And such expertise includes being able to fight ambidextrously. That means that he can use the left hand and the right hand equally well. He is very, very talented and skilled personality. But there's also something else given by the Acharyas, an inner meaning of this. And what Krishna is really saying is, actually, now you use all your skills to fight. You have the skills, so use them. But don't be proud, because it's by my desire, not by your skill, that all these great warriors are going to die in the battlefield. It's a very subtle point. But by using this one name in this verse, Krishna is pointing out that, you are very skilled. I'm acknowledging that. But don't be proud about your skills, because it's not the skills that are going to slay these warriors. It's my desire. So this is a very important point for us in anything we undertake in devotional service. We may be very skilled. We may not be skilled. That's irrelevant. If we have a desire to serve Krishna and he so desires, we can do anything. But we can only do anything as long as we remember that it's him at work through us as the instrument, rather than the instrument doing something independent. It's a very powerful point to remember and meditate on when you take up new projects. So verse 33, I want to spend a little bit of time on this verse because it was a favorite verse of Srila Prabhupada. He would very, very often use this verse to highlight many, many aspects of Krishna consciousness and Krishna's dealings with his devotees. So we won't look at all of them because that would take us, you know, quite some years probably. But we'll look at four of the different ways that Prabhupada uses this verse. All of them I've taken from Srimad Bhagavatam purports. The first thing, the way that Prabhupada used this verse was to indicate that mass annihilation, I'm raising this one because of the present situation on the planet at the moment, that mass annihilation can actually only happen by the will of the Lord. It cannot happen independent of the will of the Lord. So we can learn about this from Canto 4, Chapter 5, Purport 17. Here Prabhupada says, the battle of Kurukshetra, or any other battle at any place or at any time, is made by the will of the Lord. For no one can arrange such mass annihilation without the sanction of the Lord. The party of Duryodhana insulted Draupadi, a great devotee of Krishna, and she appealed to the Lord as well as to all the silent observers of this unwarranted insult. Arjuna was then advised by the Lord to fight and take credit. Otherwise, the party of Duryodhana would be killed anyway by the will of the Lord. So Arjuna was advised just to become the agent and take the credit for killing great generals like Bhisma and Karna. So I found this a fascinating point in terms of the main discussion or katha going around at the moment, that it's only by the will of Krishna that mass annihilation can take place. It can't be done by external circumstance. The reference is Srimad Bhagavatam 4, Canto 4, Chapter 5, purport to verse 17. Completely wiped out. Like destruction. Complete destruction. Another point that I found very sweet, another way that Prabhupada uses this verse, is given in Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 2, again Chapter 5, and again verse 17, purport. And here he explains why devotees' actions appear wonderful. It's very sweet. Those who are not surrendered souls are put under the care of the material nature. Therefore, they are allowed to do things on their own account and suffer the consequences themselves. Devotees like Brahma and Arjuna do not do anything on their own account, but as fully surrendered souls, they always await indications from the Lord. Therefore, they attempt to do something which appears very wonderful to ordinary vision. One of the Lord's name is Urukrama, or one whose actions are very wonderful and are beyond the imagination of the living being. So the actions of his devotees sometimes appear very wonderful due to the direction of the Lord. Beginning from Brahma, the topmost intelligent living entity within the universe, down to the smallest ant, every living entity's intelligence is overseen by the Lord in his transcendental position as a witness of all actions. So this is also a very fascinating statement by Krishna, that for the devotee, he's not like even so much concerned that wonderful things are happening. His preoccupation is just to follow the instruction of his Lord. You know, and this to me reminds me so much of Prabhupada. He was always so humble, even though he achieved such amazing things. And this is why. Because for him it wasn't a big deal. As the externals were not the important thing for him. The important thing was that he was in communication with Krishna and following his design. Another very wonderful way that Prabhupada uses this verse is to show how Krishna likes to give credit to his devotees. More credit to his devotees than even to himself. So here we're looking at 4th canto again, 24th chapter, verses 45-46 purport. 45-46, purport. Lord Krishna was not very pleasing to the demons when he was present in Vrindavan, but the six Goswamis were pleasing to the demons when they were present in Vrindavan. That is the beauty of the Lord's dealings with his devotees. Sometimes the Lord gives more credit to his devotees than he takes for himself. For instance, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Lord Krishna fought simply by giving in directions. Yet it was Arjun who took the credit for fighting. Nimitta matram bhava savyasachin. This is from that verse 33. O Savyasachi, can be but an instrument in the fight. Everything was arranged by the Lord, but the credit of victory was given to Arjun. Similarly, this is an amazing statement. Similarly, in the Krishna consciousness movement, everything is happening according to the predictions of Lord Chaitanya, but the credit goes to Lord Chaitanya's sincere servants. So that's also a very sweet point that Prabhupada is making. And then the last one that I'd like to share with you is how Prabhupada uses this verse on occasion to show how Krishna is dependent on his pure devotees. He's actually dependent on them. This is the mood he has with them. And this we find in Srimad Bhagavatam 6th canto, 19th chapter, verse 5, purport. Here he says, Prabhupada says, although he is full in himself, he nonetheless becomes pleased when his devotee offers him patram pushpam phalam toyam, a leaf, flower, fruit or water, in devotion. Sometimes the Lord, as a child of Mother Yashoda, requests his devotee for some food, as if he were very hungry. Sometimes he tells his devotee in a dream that his temple and his garden are now very old and that he cannot enjoy them very nicely. Thus he requests the devotee to repair them. Sometimes he is buried in the earth and, as if unable to come out himself, he requests his devotee to rescue him. Sometimes he requests his devotee to preach his glories all over the world, although he alone is quite competent to perform this task. Even though the Supreme Personality of Godhead is endowed with all possessions and is self-sufficient, he depends on his devotees. Therefore, the relationship of the Lord with his devotees is extremely confidential. Only the devotee can perceive how the Lord, although full in himself, depends on his devotee for some particular work. That is explained in Bhagavad Gita 11:33, where the Lord tells Arjun, Nimitta matram bhava savyasachin, O Arjun, merely be an instrument in the fight. Lord Krishna had the competence to win the battle of Kurukshetra, but nonetheless he induced his devotee Arjun to fight and become the cause of victory. So we've just looked at four different ways that Prabhupada has used this verse, and it's only a few of them. But it's quite stunning how we can see that the expert preacher can use what Krishna has offered to say so many things. It's very, very wonderful. So verse 35, this verse is spoken by Sanjay, and it's more or less an introduction to the next 11 verses, which will be spoken by Arjun. And these verses highlight the realizations that Arjun has had by taking darshan of the universal form. This is a very unique aspect of devotional service, of devotional consciousness, is that unlike other processes, when we have realization, we naturally want to speak them, and they'll usually come out in terms of glorification of Krishna, isn't it? They'll come out in the form of prayer. So it's a unique difference between, say, the impersonalist having a realization and us. And then I found that quite fascinating, that Arjun, he got the knowledge from Krishna in chapter 10, he's had the direct vision of it in the preceding verses of the 11th chapter, and now the realization that he's had from that is going to sort of like blossom forth from his mouth in the form of beautiful, beautiful prayers. So we'll look at verses 36 to 40 first of all. These can be summarized very briefly as like this. O Krishna, you are the master of the senses. O Krishna, you are the original creator, the cause of all causes. O Krishna, you are the supreme refuge of everything and everyone. O Krishna, you are the greatest of everything great and the supreme controller. O Krishna, you are everything. I therefore offer you my repeated obeisances. This is in essence what he's saying. So now what I'd like to do is to go back and read those verses in full. I've done it this way first so you catch the essence of the mood that he's speaking here. Govinda, would you like to come and read the verses, 36 to 40 inclusive? Just in the English is fine.
36,000. Arjuna said, O master of the senses, the world become joyful upon hearing your name, and thus everyone becomes attached to you. Although the perfected beings offer you their respectful homage, the demons are afraid, and they flee here and there. All this is rightly done. O great one, the greater even than Brahma, you are the original creator. Why then should they not offer their respectful obeisances unto you? O limitless one, God of gods, refuge of the universe, you are the invisible source, the cause of all causes, transcendental to this material manifestation. You are the original personality of God, the oldest, the ultimate sanctuary of this manifested cosmic world. You are the knower of everything, and you are all that is knowable. You are the supreme refuge above the material modus, on limitless form. This whole cosmic manifestation is pervaded by you. You are the air, and you are the supreme controller. You are the fire, you are water, and you are the moon. You are Brahma, the first living creature, and you are the great-grandfather. I therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto you 1,000 times and again yet again. Obeisances to you from the front, from behind, and from all sides. O unbounded power, you are the master of limitless might. You are the all-pervading, and thus you are everything. Thinking of you as my friend, I have rashly...
So we can understand that the primary realization that Arjuna is having in these verses is that once we realize something of Krishna's greatness, then the obvious course of action is that we will become established in dasya. We become his servant. We'll pay our obeisances to him. We'll serve him. It's an obvious thing. If someone is non-envious, that this will be the obvious thing that they'll do, that they'll surrender to him. I wanted to read something from... I think what we'll do here is we'll read the purport to 37, because this will really elaborate on what Govinda has just read. It's explaining the purport to Arjuna's behavior at this point in time, very nicely. By this offering of obeisances, Arjuna indicates that Krishna is worshipable by everyone. He is all-pervading, and he is the soul of every soul. Arjuna is addressing Krishna as Mahatma, which means that he is most magnanimous and unlimited. Ananta indicates that there is nothing which is not covered by the influence and energy of the Supreme Lord, and Devesha means that he is the controller of all demigods and is above them all. He is the shelter of the whole universe. Arjuna also thought that it was fitting that all the perfect living entities and powerful demigods offer their respectful obeisances unto him, because no one is greater than him. Arjuna especially mentions that Krishna is greater than Brahma, because Brahma is created by him. Brahma is born out of the lotus stem grown from the navel abdomen of Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, who is Krishna's plenary expansion. Therefore, Brahma and Lord Shiva, who is born of Brahma, and all other demigods must offer their respectful obeisances. It is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam that the Lord is respected by Lord Shiva and Brahma and similar other demigods. The word Aksharam is very significant because this material creation is subject to destruction, but the Lord is above this material creation. He is the cause of all causes, and being so, he is superior to all the conditioned souls within this material nature, as well as the material cosmic manifestation itself. He is therefore the all-great supreme. So this is quite an amazing meditation. On all levels, Krishna is greater than anything or anyone. So if it's Arjuna suggesting that the demigods and these great elevated personalities, they should pay their obeisances to Krishna, then why not us, the common people? This is the import there, isn't it? So verses 41 and 42 are very beautiful verses in which Arjun is begging for forgiveness from Krishna, his friend. Even though he's seeing the Krishna in his universal form, he can't forget his loving relationship with Krishna. It's very beautiful verses. He says, "Thinking of you as my friend, I have rashly addressed you, O Krishna, O Yadava, O my friend, not knowing your glories. Please forgive whatever I may have done in madness or in love. I have dishonored you many times, jested as we relaxed, lay on the same bed, or sat or ate together, sometimes alone and sometimes in front of many friends. O infallible one, please excuse me for all those offenses." The significance of Arjun calling Krishna, "Krishna, Yadava, O my friend," is explained very amazingly by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and it's summarized by Virajan Prabhu in his Surrender Unto Me. So I'd like to read this to you. It's quite amazing what he says. This is in commentary to 41-42 on page 241. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that Arjuna is lamenting his previous over-familiar relationship with Krishna. For example, he would usually call Krishna Krishna and not the more honorific Sri Krishna. Arjuna's referring to Krishna as Krishna also indicates that Krishna is a son of Vasudeva, who was merely a minister, whereas Arjuna's father, Pandu, was a great warrior. Similarly, Arjuna, a member of the royal Pandava dynasty, would refer to Krishna as Yadava, a member of a family who was unable to rule. So these are like subtle friendly put-downs. You know? Furthermore, Arjuna would sometimes say, "Oh, my friend," as if to be condescendingly kind, you know, that despite your limitations, I'm still accepting you as my friend. I'm superior to you. Out of my affection, though, I'm accepting you as my friend. Now, aware of Krishna's actual position, he's finding himself a little, he has to swallow his words. It's a different perspective that he has, a different angle of vision on the whole circumstance. So verses 43 and 44 really accelerate this intense mood of intimacy that's developing here. And although Arjuna is still mindful of Krishna's inconceivable greatness, he's overwhelmed with the fact that this is an amazing shift of consciousness of Arjuna, that he's now overwhelmed with the fact that such an amazing person can have sweet dealings with such insignificant people. Like, we are so, by nature, so insignificant. But he's prepared, this amazing, inconceivable person is prepared to enter into loving relationship with this and all these different rasas. So this is completely overwhelming, Arjuna, in these verses. And he really, at this point, this is the point at which he just can't stay upright anymore. He falls to the ground and pays his obeisances. So it's interesting that the way a pure devotee thinks, he can never be overwhelmed. He can, as we saw, be astonished or even fearful of the opulence of Krishna's universal form. But it's always the intimacy of relationship that really catches the heart of the pure devotee and brings him to a point of full surrender. So we see that this in verses 43, 44. We'll read them. Very, very subtly beautiful verses. "You are the father of this complete cosmic manifestation of the moving and the non-moving. You are its worshipable chief, the supreme spiritual master. No one is equal to you, nor can anyone be one with you. How then could there be anyone greater than you within the three worlds, O Lord of immeasurable power? You are the supreme Lord, to be worshipped by every living being. Thus I fall down to offer you my respectful obeisances and ask your mercy. As a father..." Here we're talking about, remember the last verse, he says, "You are the father of the complete cosmic manifestation." So now he says, "As a father, tolerate the impudence of his son, a friend, the impudence of a friend, or a wife, the familiarity of her partner. Please tolerate the wrongs I may have done you." Such beautiful subtleties here of emotion that Arjuna is feeling. So in verses 45-46, Arjuna is asking Krishna, to reveal his four-armed form. Here he says, after seeing the universal form which I have never seen before, I am gladdened. He's glad to see that his friend is such an amazing person. But at the same time, my mind is disturbed with fear. Therefore, please bestow your grace upon me and reveal again your form as the personality of Godhead, O Lord of Lords, O abode of the universe. O universal form, a thousand-armed form, I wish to see you in your four-armed form, with helmeted head and with club, wheel, conch, and lotus flower in your hands. I long to see you in this form. So here, it's interesting that Arjuna's a Kshatriya. Kshatriyas are extremely curious people, and they're very resourceful. And they are by nature extremely conscious in every circumstance. Their position requires that. They can't be in a situation and not be conscious. The enemy is always there. They have their state, you know, the whole country is under their control. They have to make sure everything is going properly. People are performing their religious duties and everything properly. So they're very conscious people. So Arjuna, even though he's experiencing these incredible emotions as a pure devotee, and he's just, you know, this is only like a few seconds ago, he's seen full manifestation of the universal form, he still has the presence of mind to think, well, let me make the most out of this circumstance. You know, let me see how Krishna manifests in his forearm form as well. Huh? So he's really getting his money's worth here. He's really saying, okay, I saw that, but why don't I, you know, I want to see this as well. So, and he has a very interesting reason for doing this, so that we can understand, as Prabhupada explained in the purport to 1155 that we read on the first day that we started the 11th chapter, the purport of this whole chapter is to show the common man that Krishna, in his personal form, two-handed form, this form is the supreme form. So now, Arjuna in his intelligence is asking Krishna to manifest a four-handed form so that people can understand also that this form also comes from Krishna. Not that Krishna, the two-handed form, comes from the four-handed Vishnu form. No, it's the other way around. So Prabhupada, gives a very wonderful explanation of the relationship between the two-handed form of Krishna, four-handed form of Krishna, and the universal form of Krishna in his purport to verse 46. So we'll read that. Here he says, in Brahma Samhita 5:39, it is stated, Ramadi Murtishu Kala Niyamena Tishtan. The Lord is eternally situated in hundreds and thousands of forms, and the main forms are those like Ram, the Sringa, and the Ryan, etc. There are innumerable forms. But Arjuna knew that Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, assuming his temporary universal form. Now he is asking to see the form of Narayan, a spiritual form. So there's a step up. He saw the material form of the universal form. Now he's wanting to see a spiritual form, but it's Vaikuntha, not higher. This verse establishes without any doubt the statement of the Srimad Bhagavatam that Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, and all other features originate from him. He is not different from his plenary expansions, and he is God in any of his innumerable forms. In all of these forms, he is fresh like a young man. That is a constant feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who knows Krishna becomes free at once from all contamination of the material world. So it's a very nice explanation of the relationship between these three things that we've seen in this chapter. Yeah.
So how can I convince someone who would say...
How does that look like?
Well, because you see...
Yeah, but then it goes...
I don't know the Sanskrit.
Yeah.
I don't know maybe the Sanskrit.
Yeah. But also it's not a matter of just the Sanskrit of these verses, but also what's following. Because then that four-armed form will come back into two-armed form. So we saw in the beginning, the opening verses... that from Krishna, we have the manifestation of the universal. Then from the universal, we come down to the forearm form. And from that, we come back to the two-arm form.
What if we only turn on the TV when something happens?
Well, this is one of the difficulties with people who don't accept Shastra. People that do have the piety to accept Shastra then you can explain it in reference to this chapter. Those who don't have piety to accept Shastra, they work mainly from Anuman, they work from logic, right? But it's not Shastric logic. So with these guys, you're wasting your time. Mayavadis, you're wasting your time. They can bend the Sanskrit to say anything they want it to say. They're expert. So with these kind of people, the best we can do in form of preaching, you can give them a nice photo, we can give them prasad, we can be nice to them so they think something of the devotees. But anyone who's on the platform of Anuman, on the platform of logic, without Shastra as a base, you're wasting your time talking to them. Because logic by nature appeals to the speculative mind. It doesn't like conclusion. This is a trouble with working with the academics. You know, the academics, you know, like the Munis, they want something fresher and fresher. May not make any sense, but if it's different, it's interesting. You know, so the whole mood is like that. Academic, that's why academic preaching to academics is very difficult unless you bring it down to the personal plane. If you start to deal with them, you know, in terms of being people, then you may be able to convince them of Krishna consciousness. But for as long as you're talking academics, you know, they're not really interested in conclusions. The conclusion is that you surrender to Krishna and you take up the process of bhakti. But they're not interested in that. They're interested in juggling the Sanskrit and you're having a look at it, you know, from this angle of vision, that angle of vision. They're not interested in conclusions. So that's a very difficult field of preaching. And the only way, unless you bring it down to the personal level and talk about it in terms of their experience in material existence personally, you know, you can have some success that way. And the only other way is to sort of give them other things besides knowledge. Ignorance is bliss. Ananda. What we're talking about there was material logic, but there's two aspects to the way we deal with philosophy. So when we're talking about that, we have speculative philosophy and we have Shastric vision, okay? We can look at it two ways. We can speculate and use Shastra as a base, right? Or we can speculate and use the mind as a base. So the weakness comes with trying to preach to these people that they're not using any kind of solid base. They're not using Shastra as a base, they're using the mind. So the mind's nature is ever-changing. It's swinging between Sankalpa and Makalpa all the time. So they may, in one sense, be looking for a conclusion, but the conclusions they're looking for are not conclusions because they're a temporary manifestation. They're only thinking matter. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a fact. Actually, the acharyas say that. You cannot enter into a relationship with Krishna if you don't accept the inconceivable nature of Krishna and his energies. This is there. And that's why I was stressing the point, if there is that kind of sukriti that gives bhakti, there are three kinds of sukriti. So if there is that kind of sukriti that will give rise to bhakti, then the person will be open to Shastra. And so you can use the kind of speculation and thinking about things that is based on Shastra. And you can get somewhere. But then if you've got the other side of the coin, where they're only interested in Anuman or that kind of logic that is coming from the mind, then that's extremely limited. Because the mind is a material element. We have to transcend the mind to go back home. There will come a time when we have to give up our intelligence. This is why the guru is so fundamental principle, you know, because it's the guru that takes us across that bridge, you know. We're not going to have an intelligence or a mind to deal with. They're material elements. How can they cross the material realm to the spiritual? Not possible. This is a real parampara when it comes down to the personal aspect of parampara. We need that. You know, how the guru is there, maybe we may have uppercut relationship, whatever. Depends on our level of realization. But that link has to be there, because that link, that firm faith in that link, is the essential thing, is the faith. That's what will carry us across from the material to the spiritual. Yeah. And as we make advancement, that faith will be tested on subtler and subtler points, because we're dropping things as we go along. And we have different, you know, when we first come, we have a very gross identification with the body. You know, I've got a good education, or I did this, or I'm such a fallen person. We have all these ideas of who we are in terms of the gross body and its activities. But then as we come up and we become more and more purified, we also have identification with the mind. Some people think they're their mind. You can tell by the way they behave. Then there's others, you know, we drop, get rid of that one. Then we think I'm the intelligence. No. Then we get to the tough one. What does ego mean? You know, so these are subtler and subtler things that we will be tested on in terms of our faith. And we see that many of our very highly evolved devotees have left, especially when they get to this point of identifying with the intelligence. They're becoming very, very refined. It's no problem for them to follow the four regs anymore, follow the culture anymore. They're doing everything wonderfully. But then some, you know, something comes up as a problem about what something Prabhupada has said, and their intelligence gets the better of them and they leave. You know, so there's all. This is why we have to be so focused and have a fundamental understanding of how insignificant we are, and not forget that anything that we have in the form of knowledge, we have it and the ability to understand it by Prabhupada's mercy. Without Prabhupada's mercy, you know that story of the lion and the rat, the tiger and the rat, where and there's a rat in a forest. And there's a very wonderful sadhu who's performing his austerities there. So the rat decides, look, I'm really fed up with all these other animals chasing me. I'm such a little guy, you know, so I want to be a cat. Then the cats won't be chasing me. So he goes to the sage, who, of course, because of his purity, has quite considerable power. No, he's not interested in using it so often. But this rat comes and offers his obeisances, and he's very humble and properly situated, and says, you know, please, please, you know, I'm so fearful, my whole life is so fearful, I can't do anything useful because I'm such a little guy and everybody's harassing me. So then he says, okay, what do you want? How do you see, what's the solution to this? He says, I want to be a cat. You know? So then the sage makes him a cat, but then he finds out that dogs chase cats. So then he goes back to the sage, I want to be a cat, a dog, you know. So it goes up the ladder till he decides that, you know, I want to be the king of the place, I want to be the lion. You know, so then the sadhu turns him into a lion, and then the lion thinks, the sadhu would make good lunch. So then immediately the sadhu, ding, back to a rat. So if we remember that that's actually our situation, that any advancement that we are experiencing, any realizations that we're having, any, you know, respect that's coming because we're being seen as a Vaishnava or a guru or a sannyasi, these are all externals. They have nothing to do with our position. You know, our position is we are always with our head at Prabhupada's feet. That's the safe position. No matter how big we become externally, that's all irrelevant. What allows us to actually, you know, like project what Prabhupada is saying and make sense of it for other people, it's got nothing to do with our ability. It's by Prabhupada's grace. So, you know, very important that we keep our head on his feet. Like that. And don't get, what Prabhupada used to say, don't get too much intelligent. You know? Over intelligent, yeah. Over intelligence is a big problem. Gives rise to pride, which gives rise to offense. And then we're out the door. You know? Is that okay? Okay, let's have a. Is there any other questions on what we've said this morning or on your reading also? Because Krishna was actually, we read this in Bhagavatam, but Krishna was actually widening up the whole show. You know, you find after the battle that then, you know, Arjuna can't do anything useful anymore. They all, you know, it's time to pack up, go back home, basically. So it was Krishna's way of dealing with that massive aspect of it. Because when we're reading Krishna book, even Krishna himself, huge, you know, like revenue of people and facility and opulence. So you can imagine, you know, the five Pandavas, what they had. So Krishna, he wound up the whole show. You know, he did it in different ways, but this was the first stage of that wind-up, that he got rid of the masses in this way, like that. Yeah, so let's do a quick review. What is the Kala Rupa's mission and Arjuna's part in it? Yeah. Yeah, so Kala Rupa, we're talking destruction, and he wants Arjuna to be an instrument of that. Thank you. And what is the relationship between Krishna's two-handed form, four-handed form, and universal form? That's best explained in the Purport of 46. Okay, we won't spend time on that, but consider that when we look at the answers for these questions. Okay, so today we have two speakers on these verses. Ananda, would you like to come and speak? And then we'll hear from Gazelle.
Well, these verses, the first one, what was the first one? 32, right?
Yeah.
Okay. When I read it, it's always been one of my favorite verses, 32 and 33. I just thought, Krishna always gives, you know, like, just happened to be me on this section. Time I am, the great destroyer of this world. Like that, I love that that sense. Wasn't that the verse that was spoken when they dropped the atom bomb? Yeah, right? Somebody had some insight into the... He was the one who said it. Yeah. Reminded me of Prabhupada said, they're advanced when they've just become more expert in killing. Prabhupada said they think they're so good, but actually they're just learning. We know how to kill, so they've just become a little more expert in how to kill. But it's, you know, nothing new, right? That's their advancement. It struck me that the next verse, particularly 33, get up, prepare to fight and win glory. That that reminded me of Prabhupada's mood a lot. Prabhupada, I always felt, had a real Kshatriya mood. He used to really inspire his warriors, get up and fight. And he himself wanted the benediction to die on the battlefield of preaching. So fight and win glory, you know, conquer, all of these Kshatriya words. So Prabhupada loved a good battle, that fight in Bombay. He was afterwards when they won that battle. He was very happy. Somebody just told me that the court case was dismissed. Speaking of battles, there was just a news release that American, the suing for $400 million, was dismissed out of the courts. So that battle is another battle that's over. Very well. So these first verses, simply fight. Prabhupada was always like that. Simply go on, depend on Krishna, fight, and everything will be good. So that reminded me of his mood. And Prabhupada's mission struck me that, you know, we're brought through the universal form, and Arjuna is worshipping and appreciating. But beyond that, right when it comes to the end, then Arjuna is asking to see his regular form, and his forearm, then his two arm, and how, you know, Prabhupada is trying to bring us, and his whole preaching was to present that concept that Krishna is behind all that power and glory and wonderful manifestations, and he's a person, and you can have a relationship with him. So his whole preaching mission is to present that whole other side of Krishna, which is quite, it's a unique Gaudiya Vaishnava preaching angle. I was raised Catholic, and so that awe and reverence and God the Father and, you know, the Punisher or the, you know, Redeemer, that was the theme. So this whole new aspect of Krishna being love and us having a loving relationship. So I felt that these verses, this section really, you know, really was what Prabhupada's mission was all about, to help people get beyond that Vaikuntha mood. And see God in his glory, but know there's something beyond that. And then for me, what I learned about this, I learned how to say sorry, how to apologize, how Arjuna apologized to Krishna. He was a big warrior, but he was able to very quickly apologize for being very casual or forgetting who he was. So I always think that's a wonderful ability to have, to be very easily and quickly able to say you're sorry and move on. And then the other, what I learned was myself, because I definitely am attracted by power and awe and great displays of, you know, opulence, not opulence, but power. Even, for example, big storms or great displays of nature. I see Krishna in all of that, and I find a lot of shelter even when everything's going wild. There's so much power there that I find it really inspiring. But I also have to get beyond that in my own personal spiritual endeavors to come to being satisfied, as Yashoda was saying, with Krishna and with a few gunja berries and a peacock in his head. Which, of course, that point is love, because when you love, you don't need to see anything else when you really love a person. So that's what I got out of this section.
I have written this because for me it's very difficult, you know. Also because for me this is the most difficult speech that perhaps I have ever done in my life. How can I speak about this most emotional moment in Arjuna's life and great moment in history? I don't have enough words to express, especially in English. Yeah, if you want, I can speak Spanish. Yeah. Huh? Okay. I'm going to start in text 31. After Krishna exhibited to Arjuna his universal form, Arjuna became completely bewildered and astonished. And after paying obeisances to Krishna many times, he asked, "Who are you? I want to know more about you. I don't know what your mission is." The Supreme Personality of God said, "I'm time, the great destroyer of the worlds. I have come here to destroy all people with the exception of you, the Pandavas." Krishna insists to Arjuna and said, "Even if you don't fight, they will be destroyed or die in another way. Time is destruction, and this is why desire, no, that is my desire and the law of nature. Be my instrument, Arjuna," he said. In these two texts, there are two things very important. One, when Krishna said, "I have come here to destroy all people with the exception of you, the Pandavas." And the other one is, "Be my instrument." Foolish persons who do not have knowledge think that nature is moving without a plan and that all manifestations are accidental formations. Arjuna was not in favor to fight, but Krishna said, "Even if you don't fight, every one of them will be destroyed, for that is my plan." Why, Krishna said, "with the exception of Pandavas"? Krishna wanted to say, "Those who are my devotees, who recognize me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who surrender to me, who dedicate their lives in devotional service, are dear to me, are the ones that I save from destruction. I protect them as the instruments of my plan, and I take them back to my kingdom. Arjuna, be my instrument. This is truly surrender." Prabhupada explained in text 33. There is a specific plan being carried out in the material world. What is that plan? This cosmic manifestation is a chance for the conditioned soul to go back to Godhead. If somebody understands his plan, is going to start cultivating spiritual knowledge, engaging in Krishna consciousness and devotional servant to God. Everything is under his plan, even the battle of Kurukshetra, he said. Krishna said to Arjuna, "If you follow my instruction and become my instrument, then you enjoy a flourishing kingdom with glory." In text 36, Arjuna becomes enlightened, and as great devotee and friend of Krishna, he said that everything done by Krishna is quite fit. His understanding that Krishna is the maintainer and the object of worship and destroyer of the undesirables. In this text, Arjuna is glorifying Krishna in his maximum expression. Arjuna was like out of his mind. He has never even imagined that grandiosity of God, his friend and cousin. He was expressing his emotion, saying what is said in text 36, 39 and 40, that I'm not going to read because you have the books. And all of a sudden, Arjuna started remembering his friendly relationship with Krishna and start asking pardon and excuses for the many informal gestures which arise out of friendship. This shows the mercy of Krishna with his devotees. The relationship between Krishna and living entities is fixed eternally. It cannot be forgotten, as we can see in the behavior of Arjuna. Although Arjuna has seen the opulence in the universal form, he cannot forget his friendship with Krishna, and he asks Krishna to see him in his forearm form to calm down as the original personality of Godhead. His spiritual form, that is the constant feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
So actually what Gazella said is a very nice beginning for the workshop session that I'd like to do today. It will be an individual exercise. Here, Prabhupada expands on the idea of mission quite considerably. So I would like us individually to write a prayer. It can be a prayer to Prabhupada, Gonitai, Krishna Balaram, Radhasham Sunda, whoever you feel to write to, asking them to reveal your part in Krishna's mission. All of us have a part to play in Krishna's mission of taking all conditioned souls back to Godhead. We all have our part to play as devotees. So I want you to think very carefully about who you're addressing. Who is the proper person for you at this time of your evolution and spiritual life for you to pray to? Who do you have the relationship with at this point in time to pray to? And I want you to write to that personality, requesting them to please reveal to you your part in Krishna's mission. That is the first aspect of this project that we'll be doing, this workshop that we'll be doing. You have 15 minutes to have a try at that. But then there's a second aspect of it, which is just as important as the first. Sometime today, I want you to take that prayer and go and read it to the deity. Okay? So you've got 15 minutes. Try and think carefully who you're going to pray to, address with this request, and then in your own way, in your own words, write your prayer.